You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try. Welcome to the episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio, I've got Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Tiffany.
That's me.
That's E.T. Engineer Tiffany. We're back after our much anticipated fart episode. It's kind of hard.
Highly acclaimed.
Kind of hard to figure out.
I think it won a prize.
It's kind of a raspberry. It's a run of Razzie. Kind of hard to follow that episode up, but you know, we've had so many user listener requests for that episode, we finally had to do it, and we didn't know how to follow it up, so we decided we'd have Engineer Tiffany reach into the topic grab bag and pull something up. Now, at this moment,
Lisa
and I have no idea what the topic for the episode is going to be, and so drum roll please. Tiffany, what's the topic?
We've talked a lot about rules.
Yes.
And about how to be a good teacher and how to be an involved caregiver.
And farts.
And farts and how to fart well.
And stupid rules.
And stupid rules. I've been wondering a lot about being a good director and a good administrator. What sort of rules are there to be a good director? Or stupid rules are there about being a director?
Are you planning a career evolution? Because you asked.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I love my job.
I don't know if you're planning on becoming a director someday or something. So I was the director of a center for 16 years, or at least in some sort of director position for that time, and director for most of that time. And I guess my one rule is don't hire warm bodies. As we've touched on in other episodes, having arms
and a pulse
is not enough to work in the infant toddler room or any other place in a program. I think you also, this is part of it. You need to hire people you trust. If you don't trust, if you wouldn't trust somebody with.
Use my stuff. You say it.
Do your story. You do your thing.
No, I was saying you were already talking about it.
Well, but
if you would not give somebody the keys to your house or the key to your car, how could you possibly trust them to be with the children that you're ultimately at the end of the day responsible for?
That's not complicated, is it? Yet.
It's not complicated in theory. What's complicated is that you need to fill somebody who the job of the person who didn't come back from lunch on Friday.
Absolutely. And so the another thing I think I would want in a good director is, and this has come up in other places, is the idea that you need to leave the damn building sometimes and live your life, because way too many directors I know are all about that job 24/7, and they never turn off the notifications on their phone, and at 3 a.m. something dings and they have to, or even worse, it doesn't ding, but they're laying there awake waiting for it to ding, and they shortchange their own families and put off their dreams and their ambitions and their personal goals, and they save up their sick days because they're too important to take a damn day off, and then they implode and quit and move on, or even worse, they stick around in the profession for a decade longer than they should have and make everybody else in the building miserable. Is that too harsh?
No.
I think it's very important to make sure that you actually want to be a director.
Yeah, right?
I actually had a really lovely conversation with somebody a couple weeks ago about this, and it was that usual evolution, right? She's the good teacher. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, we're going to go recruit her. And I'm like, well, do you actually want to be a director? And she paused. And I'm like, okay, that's information. Like, I'm not telling you not to accept the job, but you've got some thinking to do. Because just because somebody's saying that they want you to do it, you're still the one at the end of the day who has to
do it. Yeah.
Who has to execute
and
that.
This happens a lot because, and I think part of it is the people feel flattered by, hey, want to be the director? And you make a couple bucks more an hour and you get an office and the office is half storage room and the copy machine is in there, but it's an office. And so we're flattered that this other person thinks you're capable of taking on this new role. And so a lot of people jump at that without taking time to think about, do I really want to be away from the kids and be responsible for the paperwork?
Because just because you're good with the kids
doesn't mean you're good at the administrative part.
To be good at that administrative, the expectations once you're up there, you know, you're now going to have to be, you need to know how to do a budget. You know, you need to know how to interface with licensing. You need, there's a whole other job description and, you know, there's a skill set required. Yeah. And that's what I don't know if you know this, Tiffany, because Tiffany was the you know, hey, let's talk about this. I owned a center, but I never directed it ever because I owned it, but I taught in it. I hired somebody to be the director because at the time I knew that this was not something I was able to do. Now, when I started my master's program, you had to choose a concentration, either teaching or admin. And I chose admin, one, because I knew I, you know, would benefit from learning some of this. And two, I thought if at some point I actually was back being a frontline person, it was probably more likely that I'd be an administrator and not necessarily a teacher again. So that's why I did that. I during the classes, I saw why I was not the director of my school, because the case scenarios and here's the budget for school A and the budget for school B. And I'm like, yeah, this is why I didn't do this then, but now, you know, what I envisioned is like this monster of responsibilities. I was able to get through that and I would have a lot more confidence. But just full disclosure, what I'm saying during this podcast is what I've inferred, what I've learned, what I've seen, what I've discovered, but I cannot speak from actual experience. I know though that if you don't have a handbook of clear expectations, both from your staff and from your program, you can't hold people accountable to that which is in your head. And then what ends up happening is you have 15 different programs under one roof. And I tell directors when they're in the audience, you know, it's not the sexiest part of your job. But if you do not have a handbook, that's your first bit of homework.
Yep.
And you got to figure that out. Otherwise, it's all up and down and all over the place.
Here we go. Yeah, creating that handbook is enough, though. You don't really have to do what it says in the handbook, do you?
That's right. Just, you know, spend a month getting it all ready.
Yeah, make it pretty and put in the stuff you think that should be there.
Put it on the shelf.
And put it on the shelf and, you know, share it with parents. Put the buzzwords parents are going to want to hear in there and then ignore it.
Well, sadly, perhaps that's what ends up happening. I will often use the handbook as, and I don't like what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it, as that baseline disciplinary tool. So if I wouldn't interview you until you had read the handbook.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting in the lobby of the program, you're reading this, you come in, you have a scheduled appointment. I'm telling you to block off 3 hours. And they're like, 3 hours? Like, yep. Because you're going to read this because this is what we're going to do here. So before we waste anybody's time with an interview and a tour, I need to know if any of this stuff is going to be a problem because this is what we do here. Oh, no, it's going to be fine. Okay. So now you've kind of verbally signed off on buying into this. Now I'm going to interview you. Now you're going to sign a copy of the, you know, I'm stacking the deck in my favor. So if, in fact, you, as we've talked before, gave good interview, but then was like, rah, 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 I'm able to come back and say, hey, this, let's come back to this. You said that you said da, 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 and I'm able to use that as a tool to move ahead and that it doesn't look like I'm either picking on you or trying to just make you do what I want, but it was clearly stated what we do. Clear and consistent. Right? And sometimes we'll put stuff in the handbook that we don't actually enforce, right? Because it looked good. Ooh, I went to a workshop and they said to put this in, but I'm not going to enforce that. Well, you're only as good as what you're going to be able to enforce in your handbook.
We're a play-based program.
Really?
I mean, that
you're going to owe me $5 for every minute that you were late after 6 o'clock, unless you scare me when you walk in the door.
Yeah.
My door got locked at 6 o'clock. If you had to ring the bell, you owed me $20. People are like, ooh, that's awesome. Yeah, it is. But I enforced it. You're not going to enforce it. If you're not going to enforce it, don't put it in there.
Yeah, exactly. Because
then it makes you look like you're a doormat.
Your handbook becomes the rule book for your program, and you need to follow the rules you create. And you can solve a lot of problems by mindfully creating that handbook. If you are truly a hands-on program where kids get messy and often go home with stains on their clothes, having that clearly defined, probably with pictures, in the handbook that you give to staff and parents, makes it very hard for them to go, well, we want Janie to stay clean. Well, that's not this program. I think to be a good director, I think you also need to be very good and mindful about not only choosing the good staff, more than warm bodies into your program, and building them, growing them as professionals, but being mindful about the parents you enroll in your program.
You're interviewing them just as much as they are interviewing you.
Yeah, if you realize that a family isn't going to be a good fit for your program, introduce them to the program down the road, because you're asking for nothing but headaches. And I've never heard from somebody, I often hear, oh, there's a family. Oh, and it's very easy to complain about them and be unhappy with them. I've never heard somebody that's done the hard thing and had the conversation and said, hey, you know, there's not really a goodness of fit here, and we're not going to be able to care for your child after blah, blah, blah date. And here's a list of other programs in the neighborhood. I hope you understand. Thanks. I've never heard anybody regret having that conversation. What I usually hear is, a weight was lifted off of my shoulders and the shoulders of all the staff, and the children started behaving better. Because when you have families that you don't connect with, that don't fit with the program, it impacts every aspect of that program.
And
yes.
Staff as well.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I love that we did was, after they had made it through that first, you know, process of interviewing, then they would come back again for a tour, and then they would come back and interview with who would be their prospective co-teachers. Because I'm not the one in that. And I use the arranged marriage analogy because it's true, you know, and if I know that these personalities are not going to get along, sure there's a fit and coming back to relationships is crucial. And we all get it. Everybody's sitting around her. I get it. I get that you need a body in the toddler room, but you are setting yourself up for way more frustration than if you put a warm body in there, then if you maybe had to bite the bullet and be the person in the toddler room for a couple of weeks. You will not regret that choice to wait for the person who fits. And I also know that everybody needs to hit an enrollment mark. I get that, because that's what's keeping the lights on and keeping everybody paid. And I hate to sound trite and like kind of blasé about it, but you don't need their money that bad. When you line up the tuition that they're paying versus the headache and the Advil you're buying and the frustration, and now the good lead teacher in the pre-room is leaving because this parent just keeps thinking they're entitled to special treatment, all of that crap could have been nipped in the bud if we took the time to clearly spell out what we believe in and not be in such a hurry to get them to sign on the dotted line.
And so the suggestion is, don't create headaches for yourself. You mentioned money there. I think we also, as good directors, I think another thing to consider is who you want to crawl into bed with when it comes to associating your program with things. Because if you take funding from the United Way, you have a set of hoops to jump through. If you take money from a QRS system in your state, there's probably hoops to jump through. If you decide you're going to get accredited, there are hoops to jump through.
No free lunch.
And or if you decide you're going to sign up for the free lunch program, the federal food program, there's headaches to have and hoops to jump through. And if you're going to apply for a grant, there are going to be grant expectations that come attached to that money. And sometimes we are very eager as directors to grab at the dollars, but
give me my free cheese.
Yeah, exactly. And then terrified, angered, and upset when we have to follow through on the things that come with it. I in our own program, and I mean, it was our family program when this happened, but we abandoned the meal program because the woman they had out coming out to do visits was a raving lunatic, and I didn't want her ass in my house. And I mean, she was a nice lady. She just wasn't good at her job, and she upset Tasha, just annoyed the heck out of her. And I would rather eat macaroni and cheese cheese at home than have this person coming into my house and
measuring the size of the chicken breast.
Well, I didn't even care about it, just being unpleasant. And so we decided we would move away from the meal program and figure out other ways to make up that income because it was just too much of a headache. I hear from programs that go through the accreditation process that they feel the quality of their program go down while they're going through the accreditation process because it stresses the staff out so much and there's so much busy work involved. And frankly, me saying this on this podcast and out in public, there are probably states I don't do presentations in now because I pissed somebody off talking shit about accreditation. But I'm cool with that because until they realize that's a problem for directors and programs.
A lot of this stuff is a choice, right?
Yeah.
Choosing. Very few exception where it's something that's 100% mandated, like you are not going to be able to run your childcare program if you don't jump through these hoops. Accreditation is a perfect example. That is a choice.
It's a big ass basket of hoops.
It is. And I mean, you and I could go around all day and turn this into a whole separate podcast
about
that.
And we have.
And we have. And I wrote an article about it and alienated. And anyway, but that's a different semester. I want to go to what you said, another personal story, right? I had a childcare center in Rochester, New York, and we started at 6 weeks old, and we went to the year before that they transitioned into kindergarten. And UPK was coming into the Rochester City Schools. And I had everybody like, oh my God, have a UPK. Look at all the money. Look at all the money. Like, that was the selling point. Like, that's all they had. And I'm like, why would I have a separate room here in my program when I've got a perfectly developmentally appropriate pre-K program going right over here? Why would, oh, because it's money. You get the money, you get money. And I'm like, that's not free money. That is selling your soul. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's really kind of aggressive and in-your-face language. But to me, that is one of the biggest ethical issues facing our profession, is what we are willing to roll over and compromise for an extra, what? I get that it's money. I get that we need it. But if I have to compromise what I know to be best practice in order, that's to me, it's not even an option. Plus I continue then to perpetuate that myth that something better or, you know, is happening in the pre-K UPK room. Like it's sending a very inconsistent message. This right here in this room is what a developmentally appropriate year before kindergarten should look like. This over here is not. Oh, but you get this amount of money per kid. Yeah. I'm not willing to do it. Breathe, Lisa. Thank you. I've got two more I want to throw in. Number one.
Throw them.
Delegate or die.
Yep.
And lead by walking around.
What's that mean?
It means get out of your office. All that paperwork is still going to be there. All of that shit's going to be there. And if honestly you find yourself so overwhelmed that you become completely detached from the humans in your program, then you need to have a conversation with either whoever your boss is or who your owner is. You need somebody to come in and assist you and delegate some of that true administrative busy work paperwork so that you can be working with your families.
Yeah, because everything that goes on in an early learning program is about relationships, and directors sometimes forget that. They become so focused on the budget and the numbers and that kind of stuff that they lose the relationships. And if you do not have your people behind you and good connection to them and relationships with them, things fall apart quickly. On the other hand, if you are mindful about the relationships and you are out there in the field and you know you're going into the classroom now and then and getting somebody that extra 20 minutes a break that they need because they're at their snapping point, people will follow you through minefields if they need to when things get tough in that program, because they if you have their back, they're going to have yours. Most situations, most people, if you've done a good job of building your team.
But my first director used to walk around occasionally. She was awesome. Her name was Elizabeth. And in fact, I hadn't really thought about her until you just said that. She would occasionally come up to you like maybe 15, 20 minutes before your shift was over, and she'd be like, get out of here. You know, and you'd be like, are you really?
Yeah.
You know, and then, wow, what kind of a potentially sad reflection that is, that you're willing to follow somebody to the ends of the earth because they give you 15 minutes
of your life back.
But she was like that. And she did that. I wrote down also the tapped out story. I was observing, pause. Yeah. What I want to say is, as a good administrator director, you do what you say you're going to do. Be consistent and follow through on stuff. When you tell your staff, I got your back, I'm there for you. I'm going to stand up for you. You better be following through and not telling your staff one thing and your teachers one, or your parents one thing, because then you start splitting and you got one against the other. Here's the story. I was observing. I was there visiting, and it was the hallway, like a corridor, and all of the classrooms were on this corridor. Anyway, so I'm in the lobby talking with the director, and we're bantering, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, I will never forget this, one of the doors opened, and a teacher kind of leaned out the side of the door. Many of you listening have heard this story. She tapped her head out, and she said, "I need to be tapped out."
What?
Now. And the director looked at me and said, "You know, I told my girls when they get hired that I'm always there for them when they need me. So if you don't mind hanging out here for a minute, I got to go see what's going on down there." I had goosebumps, and for 19 different reasons as to why I thought that was so awesome. One, she obviously told them that and then followed through with it. Two, what kind of amazing environment and relationship-based culture is being established there when that teacher felt that she could admit, essentially, I am at a point of weakness and need somebody to assist me, and no, I'm not going to be judged by that. You know, and what was it, whatever was happening in the room to me is neither here nor there. What I saw was that this teacher was literally tapped out. The director went in. I don't know what she did. I'm hanging out in the lobby. She kind of, teacher took a breath, walked outside for a minute, and then was able to gather herself and go back in and be that much more appropriate. And I just, you know, I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I applaud that. I applaud that.
Oh. It was awesome. It's one of the best things I've ever seen in my years of traveling and running the roads and observing and hanging out.
That's a incredible. Great way to be there for the team. And I mean, we need to be there for the staff. We also need to be there for the parents, because we are kind of as director, you're kind of depends on the program setup, but some days you may not have direct contact with every parent in your program if you're not there at the beginning and the end of the day and stuff, but you are kind of the face of the program, and so your relationship and interactions with those parents need to be on your mind. And again, it's about building those relationships. They need to know that they can reach out to you if and when they need support, help, to be tapped out, to get information, have an issue. And a lot of times directors kind of are elusive, I think.
We had an amazing thing that emerged spontaneously where it's my mom for a while was like the greeter, you know, like, I don't want to say receptionist, but she was like
the Walmart greeter.
She was the face, right? So my mom was the first person you saw, and then the director's desk was behind there. And my mom had established this kind of routine that, you know, if you find you're in a hurry, like if this is the day that you need, like you're like late and blah, let me know, call me. I'll go get your child. I'll get them ready. Like, so you're not bringing your frantic energy in here and then getting everybody stressed out. Like, if you need, so my mom kind of got that going. My mom had coffee and muffins and cookies all the time in the lobby room, and would sit. And my mom was a very calming presence to a lot of people. The other thing that I just wrote down on my little note said sheet was Rolodex, which I realize is probably a dated word, but one of the things I learned in my undergrad program was that you at some point need to be like a disseminator of contact, a networker. You need to know how to connect people. You might not be the one that's qualified to do a psychological assessment, but who do you know that you can link these people up to? And I found that to be very serving, it successful to see. Like, so I took it upon myself to network with other people in the community, so that when a family was maybe in a state of crisis, which is what ended up happening. I mean, that's why my school ended up shutting down. I mean, Rochester, like, complete, they all got fired. I mean, everybody lost their job, you know, and there were no butts in the seats anymore. And it was horrible. And it was 2009 and that's a whole different thing. But that trying to assist people, you know, who do you call if you need some clothes? Who do you call if you need rent assistance? So do you know those people so you can be a connector for your families if the need arises?
Yeah, you become that resource hub for the families in your program. And I worked for our program was with a big nonprofit. And so a lot of the families, we were helping out or figuring out ways to connect them with people that could help with them with supplemental groceries or paying utility bills or those kind of things. But on the other hand of it, there are, you know, you got that that child and the staff feels there's something, their spidey senses tingling, and you feel like there's just something not right with that kid, you got to know the community resources to reach out to and the right language to use with a parent to walk them through. And, you know, there might not be a thing here, but maybe there's a thing. And so call Jane, whatever it is, that kind of outreach is a valuable
thing. And being willing to perhaps be the one that calls Jane and facilitates that conversation. So there's not this parent kind of doing a cold call, but hey, this woman is willing to come in and do an assessment or an evaluation or to meet in the office, blah, 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 blah. But be willing to go above and beyond.
Yeah, and part of that going above and beyond, I think also is when there's a situation, a classroom, whether it's between staff or staff and a parent and that kind of stuff, sometimes as the director, you got to step in and be the freaking adult in those situations because the adults aren't doing a good job at adulting. And so sometimes you need to play referee or whatever it is to work out those situations.
I think it's also one of the things we discovered was You were talking the other day, Tiffany, about you had us do the Harry Potter, you know, like the silly quizzes.
A silly quiz, is it?
Definitely not.
It's very serious. It's very serious. I think people on some level like to do things like that. You know, take the little test and, you know, ooh, what am I? When you are able to then gather that information, I mean, it's one thing to give somebody a personality assessment test or whatever, but then what do you do with that information? Like even when you just go into a classroom and do an observation, one of the things I learned in grad school was, you know, we can all go do an observation, but what are you doing with the data that you gather? Like how are you using that to make your relationship or your interactions better or deeper or more relevant or meaningful or more appropriate or whatever it might be? We found that we really, we use the visual, auditories, and kinesthetics. Like I wanted to learn really quick, and you usually can. Like what's their go-to way of processing information? Does this person need an article? Does she need a conversation? Like what are they needing here? And the love languages, which it worked. The five love languages, I am not a fan. I think the book is written kind of cheeseball. But at the end of the day, the five things in my experience have been pretty spot on. So once we kind of identified, not formally, but like how people responded, you know, to feedback, how you respond to feedback, it can be very different from the way you give feedback. Because usually we give feedback the way that we would want to receive it, which is why I'm not a good coach, because I'm like, boom, right to the point. And not everybody processes that. So then, you know, I'm starting to think that you don't want to be given any information, but really I'm just not as soft as maybe as I need to be. Or, you know, you plop a little something in somebody's personal cubby and she's like, oh, and it's not that you use it to manipulate behavior. Please do not take any of that out of context at all. It's that as the owner, as seen as a perceived leader, I was starting to try and figure out what makes everybody tick. And you have to realize at some point that it's not just what you would want. And so that growing out of your own comfort zone was really important for me.
So how's that, Tiffany?
I love it all so far. I want to hear more about mentoring other teachers and knowledge of adult development.
Mentoring, I'm going to say I have a very, I'm thinking of my school right now. What I learned really quickly was, one, you can't assume anything. So I learned very quickly to be very specific in my language and had to figure out how to be able to say what I just kind of do instinctually without it sounding patronizing or judgmental and not like, duh, really? You didn't know this? You know what I'm saying? So that I had
you
to
did
work.
A very good job explaining the difference between a green chili and a hatch green chili. We didn't know where the disconnect was.
There was a disconnect, but I'm like,
worked to figure out
I'm
what
like,
it was
where?
In
yeah,
a very
we're not connecting here, so let's figure this out. This
life.
Was last night at a dinner conversation, FYI, and realizing that what I do in my head constantly benefited being put on speakerphone, and that's when that kind of came out. I touched like my chest. I don't know where that came from. Like, oh, speakerphone, and I would talk through the day, and I had so many of my staff, the teachers, would be like, oh my God, that the other day when you were saying, and I'm putting the sheet down underneath the sand table because it kind of visually defines the space. And so even though if it's okay for the kids to bring the sand over there, it's kind of inviting them to kind of keep it here. I still, Mr. Drew to this day, I don't know if he listens, but he's like, that was one of like the biggest takeaway ahas. And in my brain, I'm like, what? So like not trying to overthink it. Like today I had this big, deep feel. Sometimes it's just as simple as take the lids off the paint cups. And they're like, oh my God, that's why nobody's at the easel. And you're like, yes. So it's a struggle for me. I mean, I know in one of the grant projects that I was invited to be a part of, one of the reasons that I'm sure that I wasn't invited back was because I wasn't yet at a spot of really understanding the nuances of coaching versus mentoring versus being a support. And I'm thinking, I only got 3 days with you. I don't have time to be, well, and I can understand that you have a lot, you know, but yet that's maybe perhaps what that group of people needed, right? You see, so I've had to grow in how I deliver what I know that I'm capable of delivering, but figuring out that everybody needs to potentially receive it in a different fashion has been a part of my growing.
Yeah, and so much. I mean, you boil it down. It's being authentic. It's being authentic people with other authentic people. We did a lot of that in the makeover we did at Sun Valley in Wisconsin. It was walking into an environment with people we didn't know.
They didn't know us.
And
how many days were four?
We were there three and a half days, and there was conversation and fire and tears and wine, and it was mostly about saying, hey, here's where we are, and here's where you are, and here's some ideas, and why are you doing this thing, and what do you need? And I think that pulls back into, I think there's a lot there that connects to the directorship and being able to ask people where they want to go. Because I think one thing that directors don't often pay attention to enough is grooming future leaders in Pipeline. Their programs, in their profession. And when you, so you can see that there's that person that may not always want to be in the classroom and may want to at some point move into an assistant director role and take on some of the paperwork and that kind of stuff because they have an interest and a spark with that. We've got to lift them up and help them along with that.
I'm thinking of the Good to Great book that a lot of the people in the field of early childhood education are probably on the right bus, but are perhaps in the wrong seat. Wrong seat, yeah. Right bus. So how can I, like you just said, Jeff, that's awesome. Somebody might be 100, you can tell by looking at you, like you need to be an administrator for whatever reason that might be, but maybe they're scared to take that risk. So how am I framing some of what I'm exposing them to so they start to see perhaps what I see in them, which is very different than parents really like you, your bulletin boards are awesome, you need to be the next director. I mean, we got to think about that criteria. I think a little bit more, but I want to go to what you said about mentoring. I addressed your question from my lens of me mentoring you, or as an example, but as somebody in a new director role, a little bit of input, breathe, that you're not going to know everything right away. You're going to be making mistakes. Forgive yourself, find a director's group and ask for help when you need it. We all of a sudden we step into this role and we think, oh my God, now I'm like, I'm it. And then it's all on us. And then we wonder why they burn out.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly why. Cause we put everything on ourselves instead of delegating. There is probably somebody in your program who you could delegate some of those tasks to. And that person might appreciate that little lift of responsibility without now having a new job title.
Yeah. And rotating that person out of the toddler room for 45 minutes while they helped out with some administrative thing in the office, freshens them up and makes them more tuned in. Just the change of oxygen and the change of space makes them more tuned in and focused when they get back. Yeah. Yeah.
I can use big words perhaps for a little bit.
Yeah. And so looking for those opportunities to empower your staff are valuable.
And
valuable
use things. My master's degree.
Yeah. There you go. Mm-hmm. You're the boss of the episode.
Yeah, usually your local CCRNR, your child care resource and referral, your 4C, your R&R. I mean, every town has the equivalent of this. Find them and use them. You know, usually there are director groups or support groups, and with social media, maybe you might find that support online. But be mindful of finding a network of people that assist you through and then moving on, as opposed to getting caught in that, whirlpool and vortex of just whining and complaining all the time. Yeah. I mean, there's room for a little bit of bitching every now and again.
That's joyful, good time sometimes.
And now what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, I feel like we're getting near the end, but we haven't talked about Lily and Cats once. And the nerd in me feels like we need to.
Are you wanting to talk about Lily and Cats?
Maybe a little bit. This is more from the teaching perspective than the directing perspective. I wish that administrators and directors took the time to learn about the developmental continuum of adults and the developmental continuum of teachers. And that's just a wish that I have. So if you're a director, look up Lillian Katz and read about her developmental stages of teachers and see how that changes how you interact with people.
Did it change how you interact with people?
It changed how I interacted with my administrator, yes. Because I identify in a specific stage and she lumps everyone into a different stage. Mm. And that, to me, that was immediately, this is where we're disconnecting.
How do we remedy? I'm Tiffany. I'm not part of that lump.
Ah. That lump. That lump. That that lovely teacher lump. Did I make you laugh?
Yes.
Building a team, the developmental stages of a teacher.
You thought about this much, guys?
Lillian Katz was a keynoter a couple of years ago at the Indiana AEYC conference, and I believe she spoke about this.
We learned earlier.
Survival, invented the consolidation, renewal, maturity. Yeah.
Good stuff.
So it's like Gail Sheehy's passages, perhaps, for, you know, like the lifespan. Gail Sheehy, that's old school. I think she wrote her book in the 60s or 70s, Passages, and then she wrote Men's Passages, and I believe she also then wrote Women's Passages, but not that she was, I think she, well, and I anyway, it's the stages as we get to be a little bit older.
And scene.
And this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill. We'll be back soon.
Now, I'm a little uncomfortable with how quick that ended.
Are you going to be Tiffany for the rest of this episode?
No, my glasses are not clearly as cool.
And we'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh. Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. If you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.